Good evening. Welcome to the March edition of Council Connection. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. Well, we certainly have had our fill of winter weather this month. Three nor'easters in 2 weeks, I think that's about enough. March has been a busy month for the Bay State Council of the Blind. We just finished our annual spring conference and convention, which was held on March 9th through 11th. And later on in the show, we'll be listening to the annual BSCB Awards Ceremony, which was held at our banquet this year. Before that, though, we'll be hearing from Cheryl Cummings, who will tell us about two very exciting workshops sponsored by Our Space, Our Place. But to begin the show, we'll start with Bob Hache, who has a legislative update for us. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, Steve. It's been a while since I've been on Council Connection, and we're really wrapping up for some legislative action here. We've really got some, especially at the state level, we've got some real problematic issues to deal with this year. I have two alerts that I'm going to read, and I'll discuss them a little bit after.
Okay.
One is at the national level from ACB, and the second one is from Kim Charlson and his relative to Blind Day and advocacy on the state budget. So we'll begin with the federal one. This is from Anthony Stevens. On February 27th, Congress heard from the ACB leaders and advocates from across the country as they took to Capitol Hill and carried a message of fiscal responsibility as our elected officials craft out a budget for the remainder of 2018 fiscal year and move into budget negotiations for fiscal 2019. Advocates shared a two-pronged message with Congress. First, to assure that any fiscal cuts do not negatively impact vital programs that would impede independence and opportunity for Americans who are blind and visually impaired, and to find ways to spend the existing budget more wisely. There are many programs that often run under the radar during budget talks that, if cut, would have significant impact on Americans who are blind. Independent living programs for older blind individuals, or OIB, that is Older Blind Independent Living Programs, is one such program in the Department of Education. Other examples include the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, which is funded through the legislative branch's budget. Programs like Randolph Shepherd are also at risk if proposals like the one from the White House to privatize highway rest stops is adopted. For this reason, ACB urges its members to call on Congress to do no harm to constituents who are blind through any measure of fiscal constraints. ACB also urges individuals to ask their member of Congress in the House of Representatives to co-sponsor the Medicare Demonstration of Coverage of Low Vision Devices Act, that is H.R. 2050, and the Cogswell-Macy Act, H.R. 1120. These two bills assure that government will spend its money more wisely for the millions of older adults with vision loss and for the tens of thousands of students currently receiving vision services in the schools. You can reach your member of Congress by calling the Capitol Switchboard at 202-224-3121. I'll repeat that phone number. Again, the Capitol Switchboard is 202-224-3121. We've been trying to get these two bills at the federal level passed for quite a number of years, and as many of you know, part of advocacy means that you keep fighting for the same things over and over again if you hadn't gotten them in the previous year. So now we're going to switch to the state of Massachusetts and Blind Day 2018, that is Blindness Legislative Informational and Networking Day. And on Blind Day, people from all corners of the blindness community gather at the State House to advocate for services important to blind persons. We generally have an awards presentation, a few speakers, and a nice lunch. And then the most important part of the day is traveling to the offices of your state senators and representatives to advocate for services from agencies like the Commission for the Blind, the Braille and Talking Book Library, as well as Perkins School for the Blind. So what I'm going to do is read a little bit of what we are going to be asking from the budget proposals, And obviously what we're going to want is people to contact their legislators. And at the end, I'll be telling you about a hearing that you can attend if you would like to. We want to get as many people to attend as we can. This could be a very trying year for the Mass Commission for the Blind in particular, as well as years going forward if we don't get some of the funding increases that we're asking for this year. The governor's budget proposed for the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for fiscal year 2019 has recommended essentially level funding. However, MCB faces a $1.55 million annual deficit. Despite significant recent cuts, this is due to historic practices and systemic issues triggered by several recent external factors. Early this fall, federal vocational rehabilitation funding was reduced and MCB was monitored by the Federal Rehabilitation Services Administration, RSA. The audit exposed fiscal issues going back more than 30 years and a finding ignored by MCB when last audited by RSA in 2009. MCB is working with the Baker administration and the legislature to secure additional funding beyond that proposed in the governor's budget in order to eliminate this deficit. Now, I know I just said a mouthful, and some of that might not be very understandable. So basically, we will be asking for $1.55 million in a funding increase, and that's going to be for the community services line item. That's line item 4110-1000. And when you hear this broadcast, the Bay State Council of the Blind and the National Federation of the Blind of Massachusetts will have, by that point, passed a joint resolution asking for this increase. What's going on is this. Quite frankly, MCB, and this goes back a long time, folks, back to probably before Charles Crawford was commissioner, which was in the 1980s and 90s, MCB had two choices, basically, and this happened under Janet LeBrecht, under David Gavastis as well, and also under Paul Sainer. The social services funding, there's two types of funding for the Commission for the Blind, SR, that's social rehabilitation, and VR, that's vocational rehabilitation. And SR has always been really given the short end of the stick when compared with VR. So given what I would call a Hobson's choice, which really is a bad choice, MCB decided to use some of the VR funding that was left over to fund social rehabilitation programs, SR, rather than make significant cuts to the services. And quite frankly, I may have done the same thing if I were in that boat, because making cuts to these programs is bad enough in a stable situation, but it's even worse when you consider the rapidly growing population of elders. As folks age, they do tend to develop disabilities such as hearing loss and vision loss. And that's, you know, a big part of how this, you know, came to be. And the federal government really hasn't called us on the carpet for this until this year. And now they're like, okay, wait a minute, you need to reduce the funding in the social rehabilitation side of things, because that money was supposed to get used for rehabilitation services. So we really need folks to step up to the plate. And I'll give you the phone number now, and I'll give it again at the end. In order to contact members of the State House and Senate, you can call their switchboard, which is 617-722-2000. And from there, you can either get to the House or the Senate, contact your representative or senator. If you don't know who your representative or senator is, you can call your city or town clerk, or you can contact me, and I will assist you, and I will be giving my contact info at the end of this. Now for the next proposal here. The governor's proposed budget for fiscal year 2019 for the Perkins and Worcester Libraries has recommended another year of level funding for these important programs. Advocates will be asking for an appropriation of $454,966 for the Worcester Talking Book Library. That's line item 7,009,402. This is an increase of $13,251 over the governor's proposal and an amount of $2,588,155 for the Perkins Library in Watertown, and that is line item 7,000-9406. This is an increase of $75,383 above the governor's proposal.
Now, Bob, maybe you can help me out here a little bit. I'm kind of confused because you said level funding, and to me that says we're going to get the same amount that we got last year, no increases, no decreases. And yet, in the next breath, you're asking or you're saying that the amounts here are increases. So,
well, no, I'm asking the amounts that I gave include the increases. It's a 3% increase.
Okay, but where does level funding come into this?
Level funding is before those. The funding for last year was 3% below that 2 million and the 400,000 numbers, and those have the increases added to them.
Okay, so
that's what we're asking for.
Okay, so we're not asking for level funding. We are asking
for increases.
No, we are asking
for a 3% increase in both of these line items as described. And those numbers, the 2 million number and the 400,000 number, those numbers actually have the increases put in.
Okay.
If you subtract 3% from those figures, you will get what the governor was proposing, which was actually the same as last year's final for FY 2018. That was the funding level. And, you know, like we were discussing before, a lot of the same population that is increasing within the Commission for the Blind, some of that same population is also now wanting and needing services from the Talking Book Library because they can no longer read regular print,
of course,
due to vision loss. So it stands to reason that they're going to be needing, you know, more. And there's also a lot of people that the Talking Book Library still has not been able to outreach to. They had small cuts in recent years, so they've had to actually cut back a little bit on the amount of outreach that they're doing, which is very unfortunate given a growing population.
Well, and as we know, even quote-unquote level funding is really kind of a cutback because costs increase.
It is, absolutely, absolutely. And incidentally, these amounts, these 3% increases, were actually also requested by the Board of Library Commissioners, which oversees all of the libraries throughout the state of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And so they recognize that the Talking Book Library is in need of increased funding as well. It's not just, you know, us advocates from the blindness community.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of how all that works. So, again, you contact your state house representatives and senators either on the phone, and that's at 617-722-2000, and you can then contact the Senate or the House, or you can go online to mass.gov/legis. That's mass.gov/legis. From there, you can go to the pages of the House or Senate, find your representative, or if you want, you can find the Ways and Means Committee where the budget is going to be heard. And speaking of the Ways and Means Committee, there's one more thing I'd like for folks to do if possible. There is a public hearing taking place on Friday, March 16th at 10 a.m. at Gardner Auditorium at the State House. At this hearing is for any items related to the fiscal 2019 budget, and I've attended quite a number of these hearings, and it is amazing sometimes the stories that one hears of what happens if various line items aren't increased. I mean, you hear from homeless persons, from people who are working to decrease things like child poverty and hunger, education, and disabilities and all of the above. And because of the potential crisis that MCB is facing, quite frankly, that crisis could hit harder next year than this year. We are hoping to get a good turnout of blind and visually impaired persons at this hearing.
Now, if for some reason people can't make the hearing, and truthfully, some of our listeners, by the time they hear this, the hearing will have gone by.
Okay.
Are they completely out of the loop in terms of anything
they
can do?
No, they can very easily still. I would say that up through about March 20th or 25th, they can contact the their representatives and senators because the budget will be being worked on up through that point in time.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, the Ways and Means Committee produces its proposal, and that thing won't be debated before the full House until probably middle of April or something like that. So there definitely is time for folks. We were looking for people to show up just as a show of support, but it's also very important. The more folks, you know, the more senators and representatives that say, hey, I got four calls on these two items, maybe I better do something about it. Because for every call they get, they assume that maybe 50 or 100 other people might be feeling the same way.
That's right.
So the calls really do help, and also the emails in to reps and senators. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's more important than one would think. So we really need folks to really step up to the plate this time around. And if anyone wants any further assistance from me, my name is Bob Hache. I can be reached at 781-893-6251 or via email at bhache@verizon.net. That is bhachey@verizon.net.
All right. Well, thanks again, Bob, for explaining a few things to us and being on the show.
All right. Very good, Steve.
This year, our annual Blind Day was supposed to be held on March 13th, but, of course, that was postponed due to the inclement weather. It was rescheduled for March 22nd, so if you're still thinking about attending, by all means, register. And if not, make sure that you contact your legislatures about the issues that Bob has talked about. I'm Steve Dresser. You're listening to Council Connection. The show airs on the second Tuesday of each month on ACB Radio Mainstream starting at 9 o'clock Eastern and on the third Saturday of the month on the Talking Information Center Network at 8 p.m. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please leave us a message in the BSCB mailbox at 617-923-4519. Our next guest, Cheryl Cummings, is here to tell us about two very exciting workshops sponsored by Our Space, Our Place. Good evening, Cheryl. Glad to have you back on the show.
Thank you for inviting me back. I'm so excited to talk with you again.
Now, last time you were here, and actually maybe we before we get into any of this, we should get a little background on you because our longtime listeners know who you are, but maybe our new listeners may not. So what do you do that would be of interest to everybody here? You run an organization called Our Space, Our Place, right?
Yes, I do. So Our Space, Our Place is a nonprofit. And what we do is we offer an after-school and career exploration program for currently students ages 10 and older. So we meet throughout the school year, starting in September. We meet every Tuesday for the younger students, and at present those are students ages 10 through 12. And then we meet every Thursday, and in that group we have kids ages 16 and older. And then we also meet the first two Saturdays of the month. And as an after-school program, we do a variety of activities. So we have theater, who's taught a class that's taught by an actor. We have dance, of course, taught by somebody who is was a professional dancer. We offer yoga. We take trips sort of around Boston. So with our younger group, This year we've been to Legoland. We went to this wonderful place where you had a chance to choose like a pottery form and paint it. And then they fired it and we picked it up. So the kids were really excited. We had people choosing cats and frogs and plates and cups. We do tours of like the Museum of Fine Arts, Museum of Science, the Society of Arts and Crafts. We're trying to work on something with some other museums in the area. Oh my gosh, I forgot. We went to the Sports Museum at TD Garden. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You felt like you were getting sort of the back end sort of tour of the facility.
Yeah, so. Fascinating stuff for any of the kids, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So how long has our space, our place been around? It's been several years, hasn't it?
I know. Time flies. We started in 2005.
Wow.
And the really cool thing is we've had students who've been with us since we started.
That's fantastic.
They are about to graduate and some are about to, go on to like employment. And it's been really cool.
Terrific. Terrific.
Yeah.
So now you've got a couple of workshops coming up in the not too distant future, especially one in April, I believe it is. Is that right?
Yes. So we have a workshop coming up. It's for girls, middle and high school. And we're calling it, it's a little play on the word beautiful. So we're calling it B-U, so B-E-Y-O-U, TIFL.
Ah, very good.
Yeah, because we wanted to basically bring girls together. And in this instant, we're recruiting girls who are blind or low vision and girls without disabilities. Because what we want to spend our time doing is sort of breaking down some of the barriers. And by the end of the workshop, we want everybody to leave going, we're girls, whether we're blind or whether we're not blind.
And that's a huge issue for people in general anyway, because, often the blind people, whether they're girls or boys or whatever, kind of grow up in a parallel world where they don't have a whole lot of contact. And you would think they would, though, with mainstreaming being more common than it used to be and that kind of thing. But I don't know. Apparently that's not the case, though, is it?
I think it depends, but we recognize and I say we, I mean the organization, and it's not something that we just sort of dreamt up because we wanted to do it. We're doing some reading, sort of talking about like the perceptions of girls and how, sort of understanding who you are and what your potential is, how that can impact your pursuit of success, be it academically or socially. Mm-hmm. And within the context we were initially reading, this was talking about girls from different ethnic backgrounds. And then we realized that, this pertains to girls who were blind also.
Right.
And so we thought, since it sounds like all girls basically have to contend with these types of issues, why don't we create a workshop where that's what we're going to focus on? We're going to spend, our goal is to invite women, so people who have gone through the process, that have come out the other side and are succeeding, to come and talk with our young, our kids in middle and high school about sort of, how do you do that? Like, what's the process? Like, what do you need to know and how do you sort of develop those skills and contacts and networks so that you can make it through middle school and make it through high school and pursue sort of whatever it is you want to do. So that's sort of the top level of what we're going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. and we're hoping to. So the workshop is currently scheduled for 3 days during the April break. So it's the 17th, the 18th, and the 19th.
Okay.
We're meeting at 89 South Street, which is downtown Boston, very close to public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first day, we're talking about, you know, sort of getting to know each other and, like, what do we have in common? What are some places where we may differ? But fundamentally, like, what do we have in common? The second day, we're hoping to spend sort of focused on, like, healthy living. So healthy eating, healthy, like, taking care of your body, those types of things. And so we're hoping for that day to invite in a nutritionist to talk to us about that. And then somebody who, you know, knows about sort of, as I said, taking care of your body. Like, how do you do that? You know, and then talking as part of that about, like, what is beauty? Because, you know, we in America, there are very strong concepts about what's beautiful and what's not beautiful.
Yes.
And so what do you do if maybe you don't hear somebody like you being described as beautiful? I mean, how do you define your own beauty? Where does that come from?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and then our third day is a little open because one thing we wanted to do is maybe at the end of the first day, if there's a topic that the girls themselves decide that they would really like to focus on, then that's something we're hoping to do the third day.
So now this is going to be open to mostly just people in Boston itself, Boston proper, or is it going to be open to people from out of town, so to speak?
Oh, this is open to anybody who wants to come.
Ah, okay.
So, you know, we definitely want our Boston girls to join us. But if somebody hears about this and they live someplace else and they want to join us, and, you know, this is something that they're interested in talking about and you know, being actively sort of involved in discussing, then we want them to join us.
Okay. And I assume that registration for this workshop is still very much open. And
yes.
So what would people do if they want to become a part of this?
Oh, this is easy peasy and back to, like, old technology. I'm going to give you the phone number for the organization, and they just basically need to call.
Okay.
And let me know that they're interested, and then we'll take whatever additional information is needed.
All right.
But so basically call 617-459-4084 and just say you're interested in attending the girls' beautiful workshop.
All right. Well, that certainly should be an exciting thing for the month of April. And looking a little bit further down the road, you've got another workshop in July that's not just for girls, but I guess for everybody, right?
It is. This one's open to everybody. And this will be the third year we're offering this workshop. This is our coding camp.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very excited because Microsoft has agreed to give us space.
Great.
So that's really fantastic. So that means it will be in Cambridge. And this is from July 9th through the 13th. So it's a week-long program. And basically what you learn, and let me emphasize this. This is for anybody who has always been a little curious about what is that thing called coding? Like, what are you doing and how do you do it?
Yep.
So again, sort of going back to the sort of the foundations of coding, we spend a week sort of learning how to hand code, how to write HTML, that's the hypertext markup language.
which is used on every single web page that any of us ever goes to.
Right. How to do CSS. And then we do a little introduction around, like, what is JavaScript and how does that sort of interact with the other two. Mm-hmm. And at the end, I promise you, even if you've never done it before, you will create a website.
Well, that's terrific. And yeah. And in today's programming world, that's what most of it's all about, is becoming a presence on the web in one way or another.
Yeah. And you will create, let me just say this, you will create an accessible website.
Even better.
Because
we know people that can create inaccessible websites, and we've got absolutely plenty of examples of those. But what we want as well is people who can create accessible websites.
Yes. Yeah. And the instructor is this wonderful woman who herself is blind and has been an assistive technology trainer for over 20 years. And she's just like a dynamic, fun, very, very good instructor. I mean, I'd say, like, you know, when we first started, I would not have thought that I would ever understand any of this. Because, you know, sometimes you grow up and you sort of put yourself in a box. You're like, well, I'm not a computer person.
Right, right.
Right?
And, no, we
and
all
that,
do that kind of thing.
And that was definitely me. I'm like, I mean, you know, I understand the importance of sort of learning coding, and I want our students to know how to do it. But secretly, I'm like, oh, this is not for me.
Well, again, we've all been to web pages. We do it all the time, every single day. But
right.
That doesn't. But you know, for many of us, and I have to say that even though I've done some of the kinds of things you talk about, some of it's still a mystery to me, too. I mean, I start to feel like I'm, you know, poking my finger into the black box and hoping that, you know, I'm not going to get a shock.
Right. But I've got to say, Lynette has made it so much fun that, you know, and even though I'm sitting just sort of listening to what the students are being taught, I mean, I've got to say the light bulb goes on and you're like, oh,
well, yeah,
get
you can't help but absorb some of it because you're there.
And I'd say the other part of the coding class, which I think is very meaningful, is in as much as we're sort of learning coding and working towards creating a website, during our lunch period, we invite in professionals who are working in the technology field. Some are blind professionals and some are sighted. But the main aim of doing that is we want our students to learn about sort of the different options. So coding is just one aspect of work in the technology field. So what else can you do? And then we have these great speakers who come and, you know, folks, I've got to say, I've never seen a group of folks more like committed to their work and who just love what they're doing. And they share that with our students.
And that's a really important part of it for young people to realize that what you do in high school or what you do after school isn't just in a vacuum. I mean, it does have a connection with the adult world.
Yeah. And I I'm so excited because we have James Thay. I think that's how you say his name. He's one of the creators/founders of NVDA.
Ah.
And he is already committed to being one of our speakers.
Well, that's terrific.
So I'm so looking forward to hearing from him because, I mean, he's worked on, you know, NVDA, and he's now working with Mozilla Firefox.
Okay.
So it'll be very interesting to hear from him. And, of course, because he lives in Australia.
Yep.
We've sort of so during that week we will generally meet from 10 to about 2:30, but on Wednesday, to allow James to join us, we're going to actually have an afternoon session.
Ah, okay.
As they are, is it 13, 15 hours ahead of us?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly, but I know it's at least half a day.
Yeah. So he's generously agreed to wake up early on Thursday.
Okay. For a second there, I thought maybe he was going to be joining you, going to fly up to the United States and join you. But I see how it's going to work. He's going to talk to the group from where he lives.
Yeah, and that's really one of the really nice things about being in the Microsoft Office space is they've got these like funky, cool technology, you know, based conference rooms.
Oh yeah.
And I've got to tell you, last year when we were there, it was so amazing. We had students participating from New Hampshire in Virginia. And, you know, we could hear them. And then when it was necessary, they could share their screens with the instructors in the room.
Great.
So that we could, you know, do like live corrections.
Yep.
So I am so grateful that Microsoft said yes again.
And this is the kind of thing that 20 years ago would have been impossible. I mean, or so difficult that it would have just been too daunting to even consider. And now you just it's almost as if you just ask and wave the magic wand and there it is.
Yeah.
Well, this is really exciting stuff here, Cheryl. And I think we should have you and Lynette back on the show in June to kind of tell us about it again, remind those of us who have short memories and maybe even catch some people who hadn't known about this and might be interested in doing it.
We would love to join you. Just tell us when and we will be there.
All right. It's a deal.
Okay.
And thank you again, Cheryl, for being with us tonight on Council Connection. And I wish you all the best of success and lots of candidates for the beautiful workshop, which is a beautiful idea. I don't want to use that word too much because we'll be accused of being repetitious or something. But I think it really is a great idea and it's a great work that you're doing here.
Thank you so much.
I'm Steve Dresser, and you're listening to Council Connection. One of the highlights of our annual BSCB banquet is the awards ceremony. Here's BSCB President Brian Charlson to introduce the awards committee and to kick off the proceedings.
I want to invite our awards committee chair and his committee to come up here and join me at the podium, because we have some awards to hand out. So that's Jerry Barrier, and coming up with you is who else, Jerry? Mary Heroyan? And Kim Charlson.
Good evening, everyone. I am here to present the first of the awards, which is the 2018 BSCB Community Access Award. And this award is given to an individual or an organization that has helped to enhance access for people who are blind and visually impaired, access to endeavors such as health or technology, education, the arts. And unfortunately, this year's recipient for this award could not be here at the banquet. He does send his regrets. We will have a chance to see him next Saturday to present the award. But this year's 2018 recipient for the Community Access Award is Jim Izad. yes. Thank you. And just basically, based on an idea that was mentioned by the Worcester Talking Book Library Consumer Advisory Council meeting, based on an idea that was mentioned by this group, Jim Izad, who has been director of the Worcester Talking Book Library since 1993, he took the initiative and decided to look into being able to offer assistive technology workshops for people living within the Central Mass area. So beginning in 2013, he began to offer these workshops in the use of JAWS. So with hands-on, free of charge, expert training provided by the Carroll Center, people living in central Massachusetts, patrons of the Talking Book Library, could come right down to the Worcester Public Library on Saturdays and participate in this hands-on training. So for the first several workshops, it was all geared towards learning JAWS. And it has evolved since then to include iDevices, such as the iPad or iPhone, and also learning about helpful apps. We've averaged about 8 sessions per year since 2013, so we've had really wonderful training. So Jim did this once again because of the idea introduced by the Consumer Advisory Council. Jim has also helped to build or created and began building the large print book collection that is available throughout the state of Massachusetts. The titles are held at the Worcester Library, and they're available for adults and children. So we have several thousand large print titles that are available that you're all able to request along with Talking Books. So we wanted to thank Jim Izat for his vision of what library services is all about and for his commitment to everyone being able to read. So thank you, Jim.
This is not an easy thing to, when you have so many good people doing good things, to decide, okay, who gets the award this year? But we deliberated and managed to find who we felt were the appropriate recipients, and I'm very proud of all these people and my awards committee. I'd like to call on Kim next.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. Can everybody hear me? That's really weird because the microphone's pointing at the ceiling, but I'm... Okay, sounds good. All right, well, I'm very honored to be making this presentation this evening. This is the Bay State Council of the Blind Outstanding Service Award. And this award is given to an individual or an organization who has just done something exemplary, really exceeded all expectations for and on behalf of the blindness community of Massachusetts. So this individual is a longtime community leader and advocate of the blind. He has always been an outspoken advocate and leader within the blindness community, tackling big issues with conviction and determination. In August of 2013, he was appointed as commissioner of the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. So now you know who it is. But I have a lot more to say. Yes, it is Commissioner Paul Sainer who is receiving the Bay State Council of the Blind Outstanding Service Award. So let me tell you why we selected Paul. Paul is a former managing director of Bank Boston, now Bank of America, and previously worked as a real estate executive. During the 1990s, he was president of the Massachusetts affiliate of the Foundation Fighting Blindness and served on the executive committee of FFB's national board. He was the 1998 recipient of the Carroll Society's Blind Employee of the Year Award. After retiring on disability from Bank Boston, he received specialized vision rehabilitation training sponsored by the Mass Commission for the Blind from the Carroll Center for the Blind. From 2001 until being recruited as commissioner, Paul has been involved with numerous nonprofits, both community and blindness related. He served as a volunteer vision rehabilitation teacher for many years and as a board vice chair at the Carroll Center for the Blind. He chaired the Perkins Libraries Consumer Advisory Board as a member of MCB's and was a member of MCB's Rehabilitation Council, and was a co-founder of the annual blind event at the State House. Paul was a co-founder of the Boston's Metropolitan Waterworks Museum. Other nonprofit experience includes him serving as a trustee of the Brookline Community Foundation. He's also active in his local government, presently serving as a Town of Brookline meeting member and co-chair of the town's Economic Development Advisory Board. He holds an MBA in finance from the University of Rochester and a BA from Trinity College. He's been married to Sandra, who's here with him this evening, for 35 years and is a proud father of two daughters, Caitlin, a lawyer, and Jennifer, an occupational therapist. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome and acknowledge the contributions of Paul Senior. So Paul, would you come to the podium? All right, I'm going to read the plaque. It says, Bay State Council of the Blind, Outstanding Service Award, presented to Paul Senior in recognition of his leadership and management of the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind as its commissioner since August 2013, to his personal advocacy, genuine empathy, and involvement in providing programs fostering independence for people with vision loss in Massachusetts. Burlington, Massachusetts, March 10th, 2018. Paul, congratulations.
I am nearly speechless. Thank you to the committee and to my friend Kim. I'm delighted to be with you all tonight. This is an extraordinary organization. I want to compliment you all for the great work you do for yourselves and for the blindness community. I want to give a special shout out to the many MCB employees that are here today. It's truly an honor to be able to be part of such a great organization of MCB and to be a public servant. I want to thank in particular my close friends that are here this evening that have been very helpful to me, especially over the last year, working through what needs to be done for MCB. And they are Brian and Kim and Carl and Deanne and Bruce and Cheryl. I also want to give an acknowledgement out to my other very close friend, Amy Rule of NFB Massachusetts. I don't know if you all know, this summer we reconstituted the Statutory Advisory Board of MCB, and we've got two ladies that are the foremost advocates for blindness in the country, and both Amy and Kim serving on our Statutory Advisory Board. The Bay State Council for the Blind, I want to ask if I could ask if Brian could modify that acronym over the next couple of weeks or months. And I'd like BSCB to stand for the Band of Citizens and Stakeholders for the Blind. We need everybody to come together. And notice I said for the blind. It's not just incumbent upon all of us that are blind, but all of the other stakeholders, the teachers of the visually impaired, our friends and family, to help advocate for what's so important to us. Again, I want to thank you all for this award and for being part of the extraordinary Massachusetts blindness community. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to bring the box so we can pack it up.
Well, there's one plaque left here. And this, I nominated this person for the Betty Gazagian Award. Oh, sorry. I nominated this person for the Betty Gazagian Award. The Betty Gazagian Award is given to a BSCB member who has done something outstanding, typically over a long period of time, and often it's something that's somewhat thankless that they've done. And this person, I met her for the first time in 1998 when I first moved to Massachusetts. I don't want to give any hints away, but she came with Kim and Brian to meet me at my office, and they took me out to dinner. And I remember thinking, oh, these are very nice people. That's nice of them to take me out to dinner. Little did I know I was going to be editing the Bay Lines for the next 6 years for that dinner. But that's beside the point. That didn't come from the person that I'm giving this award to. But I would like to call my good friend, Vicky Vogt, to come up front. And I want to say a few things about Vicky. I could go on for a long time, but Vicky, everyone here knows, is a true friend to this organization, and she's been a friend to me, someone who I'm honored to call my friend over the years that I've lived in Massachusetts. In fact, I'll say this rather personal thing that Vicky doesn't even know, I don't think, but after my wife died 2 years ago, and you know, I was trying to get my sea legs back, and I was working, and I was, you know, a shell of my normal self, I guess, and I found that I needed to do some things to derive warmth from people who had a lot of warmth to give. And I used to walk down to the Braille and Talking Book Library quite often, sometimes every day for days in a row. And I'd never stay very long because I didn't want to get in trouble. But I would just go in there and say, "Hi, Vicky, how you doing?" And she would always say, "I'm doing fine. How are you?" And I'd say, "I'm fine." And I'd go back to work feeling better. And, you know, I'll never forget that. It was a beautiful thing for me. And Vicky also, as you all know, does the weekly listing of audio-described videos. And that's not an easy task. There's work that goes into that project. And it may have Kim's name on it, but Vicky's the one that does that research.
So, as of today, Vicky's name goes on.
All right. And there's one other thing I want to say about Vicky. that is that, how many of you know that Vicky is a poet? And not only is she a poet, I've tried to get her to help me write some limericks, but she's not into that kind of poetry. She has written a book of haiku poetry. What's the name of your book, Vicky?
Glimpses.
Glimpses. And it's...
I got into haiku.
And it's a very nice book. I bought a copy of it, and Lee and I read some of it a couple of times at dinner when we were sitting in my apartment. And I would recommend, I know that there are places where you can get it. Is it available from Amazon?
It's available from me.
Aha. Okay. And Vicky and I will be splitting the proceeds for every book she sells. So I'm going to attempt to read this plaque. I haven't read it before. Bay State Council of the Blind Betty Gazagian Advocacy Award presented to Vicky, V-I-C-K-I, Vogt, in recognition of her dedication, advocacy, and hard work on all issues surrounding audio description, access, and her commitment to informing individuals who are blind or visually impaired in Massachusetts and across the nation of the availability of audio description for all media. Burlington, Massachusetts, March 10th, 2018. Vicky?
Wow. I'm speechless. I thank you, everybody, for this award. It just it's a very wonderful award, and I really appreciate getting it. Thank you.
Don't go away.
Oh, don't go away.
I can't help it, but Vicki, you know, is what Kim refers to as her life sister, right? Been living with Kim and I for how many years? Come on.
Fess up. 37.
37 years. She went to grad, well, she was Kim's original reader back in college. If anybody remembers Public Law 94-142, anybody remember that one? Education for All, Handicapped Children's Act or some such thing? The preceded idea? Anyway, it was the first thing Kim ever asked Vicki to read to her. And was that terrible? But she has become an incredible reader. She reads menus like she wrote them. Although in a Mexican restaurant, she's a little challenged when it comes to those things. Now, for those who know Vicki well, what color do you think she's wearing tonight? Thank you very much. That is absolutely true. And I want you to know that the cover on Vicki's book is actually a photograph of a painting that she bought when we were in Hawaii at the Hawaii Association for the Blind convention. And she just loved that painting and loved that painting. Looked in her book, looked in her pocketbook, and, you know, nothing but moths came out. So there was no way she was going to buy that thing. And then at the convention, when pulling out the winning number for the $5,000 first prize in the Braille Forum raffle, they said, Vicki Vogt from Watertown, Massachusetts. So that bought her that painting, and that helped her pay for this book. But she also had a lot of people help fund that book, because we're all in love with our Vicki. Thank you very much, Vicki, for all you do. And thank you to the awards committee. They did a great job.
Well, that'll just about do it for the March edition of Council Connection. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please leave us a message in the BSCB mailbox at 617-923-4519. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, inviting you to join us again in April when we return with another edition of Council Connection. Take care.